He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Okay, good morning to our listeners on this week's edition of Car Keys with Jay and Robin. And I'd like to start off this week's show by discussing something that's going on behind the scenes in the manufacturing business of auto building, and that involves two companies, Honda and Nissan. News that came out on the morning that this show was taped, and it may not be the day you're listening to it, was that Honda and Nissan are going to tie up together going forward. Nissan, as Jay has suggested on this show, was about to go out of business, or that was his opinion that it was, because its lineup was not very good. And maybe they heard the message through the skywaves about our show discussing it, and they thought they better get together with somebody else before it happened and prove Jay right. So that's made the news. I don't know what's going to happen. Jay, you want to chime in because you suggested a solution. Honda was giving me the money. And
I did a little a quick research. I heard this news a few days ago while I was still in Europe, and I heard it on the news there, and they were actually talking about the companies you're talking about, Nissan and Honda, and as part of that possible deal, Mitsubishi, which is really has become a nobody in the car world, at least in North America. I'm not quite sure how they're doing in the rest of the world, and we know that Mitsubishi does trucks and heavy equipment. So as a company as a whole, I'm sure they're doing just fine. So Mitsubishi is involved in this Nissan-Honda possible deal, but there was also talk of Renault being part of it and in some fashion. But that's much more unlikely. We know that Nissan and Renault were tied for a long time until Carlos Ghosn, who was the CEO of the two companies, ended up fleeing and hiding somewhere in Lebanon, I think, where he is or was. So Renault may not be part of that deal. I don't think much of personally of Nissan products, at least as we see them here. But I did a quick look at where the company stood on the world stage, where it really matters. And as of 2023, Honda sold 4 million vehicles worldwide, and Nissan sold 3.3 million. So I was a little doom and gloom when I said that Nissan was totally done. Obviously, they still sell quite a few vehicles. And the market shares they have, or their share of production, is pretty much the same. So both of them have like 33 to 37% of their entire production is sold in North America, and about 30% and I'm giving you rough numbers, both companies, Honda and Nissan, in China, and like around 12-15% in Japan, and then Honda sells even less than Nissan in Europe. Honda only sells 2% of their cars in Europe, which was quite surprising. But what strikes me the most is these two companies really have the same strengths, but also the same weaknesses. Neither one of them is is performing in the electric vehicle world, and both of them have pretty much the same market strength. So I really don't know what the advantage of these two companies getting together is.
Okay, well, let's go to Nissan versus Honda at the moment. Let me interrupt you, because Honda is performing in the electric world. It's got one total electric vehicle out and a number of hybrids. So Honda is ahead of Nissan in that department, Jay. Just wait a minute, Jay. Okay. The other thing I want to bring up about your commentary about percentages is one thing, but numbers are something different. 35% of 10,000 vehicles is 3,500 vehicles. 35% of 100,000 vehicles is 35,000 vehicles.
Well,
so numerically, Honda is doing better than Nissan, I believe, at least in North America, probably by quite a bit. Anyways, back to you.
Well, again, I understand fractions and arithmetic. I'm just saying, when I was talking about these percentages, this was of their annual production, their own numbers.
Right.
And so, and one of them is 4 million total vehicles, that's Honda, and 3.3 million for Nissan. So the numbers worldwide are if not the same, you know, they're somewhat equal, or comparable. Comparable is a better term. As far as Honda being and their electric vehicles, so far the only fully electric vehicle Honda has in this market, and they have none in Europe, and I don't know about the rest of the world, but is a GM product. And the Honda Prologue, which is outselling the Chevy Equinox, on which it is based, is a GM technology vehicle. And Honda has just broken ties, or announced it was breaking ties with GM. So they're giving up their ties with GM and going ahead with Nissan. So I'm sure I'm missing something. I mean, obviously, there are people running these companies who sort of kind of know what they're doing, certainly more than I do, but I don't see it as of yet. Okay. Speaking of these mega mergers, and where these big players on the world stage stand, while I was in Europe, I also heard a lot of news about Fiat. So Fiat is the Italian branch of Stellantis. And the thing is, Fiat is not really doing well in Europe, and not even in its own market in Italy. And there's this whole announcement of Fiat that they are going to focus on Italian production. The Italian government is going to pump money into Fiat. I don't even know how they can do that from a regulatory standpoint, because I don't know that European Union members can go ahead and subsidize companies. But that's what seems to be the word. So Stellantis has its own problems. Nissan and Honda do too. You know, and then we talk about, you know, I mentioned earlier today that Ford and VW have had these
cooperative adventures.
Correct. That's exactly what they have been. There's, as far as I know,
Ford and VW, Jay, have been in a cooperative adventure for decades, actually. VW made Ford badge. VW made Ford badge vans built in Europe, and other vehicles, I believe, as well.
Yes.
So I don't know what they're really going to do either long term.
Well, and this is where I was going. Ford has two vehicles right now that are based on Volkswagen electric platforms. So they have and I was shocked and I had to look it up because I saw the ads in Europe. For the electric Ford Explorer. So Ford had been selling a few of the American models in Europe. They always have. But in the last few years, they were selling the Ford Explorer. They're selling the Ford Ranger, and they sell the, I believe they sell the F-150. And now they're selling the Bronco. And
they sell the European version of the Ford Escape. Which is called, I think, the Kuga or something like that.
But now Ford is marketing, has started selling, I think, since last fall, actually, so it's been about a year, the electric Ford Explorer, which is basically a Volkswagen ID4. So it's a Volkswagen platform. And they have also, I just found out, resuscitated the Capri brand name. So they're doing in Europe what they've done here with the Mach-E Mustang, is they're selling a Ford Capri, which is a coupe-like electric vehicle, but I think it's still a four-door. It kind of has styling cues from the original Capri from the 70s, and it's also based on the Volkswagen electric platform. So Ford's electrification, at least in Europe, is totally dependent on VW. So who knows where that goes? But those two companies, like you mentioned, have been tied.
A quick question, Jay. Did you see a German-built Explorer anywhere in your travels? Because does it look like a Ford? If you did, if you
actually,
didn't, just say so.
I don't recall seeing one. Then I saw pictures of it, and the electric EV, Ford EV, looks actually, there is some styling cues from the Ford, the Ford Explorer we have here now, the current Ford Explorer, for sure. And it's obviously totally differently designed, but there are cues of the Ford Explorer that we know here. And
not likely to be
good.
Not likely to be brought into the U.S. in that form, as opposed to doing their own electric Explorer. Would they be trying to do that?
I think, for one thing, it's interesting because I think that historically those production and technical or product agreements between VW and Ford have been limited to the European market, or at least have excluded the North American market. I don't know about other parts of the world, but definitely we never saw, that van that you mentioned that both Ford and VW marketed, that minivan, never made it here in the U.S.
Right.
But it's interesting. It's been a cooperation that's been going on for decades now. But who knows where it goes.
Okay. Can we change topic right now?
Absolutely.
Okay. As many listeners who are regularly listening to us, we keep talking about range anxiety in electric cars. Motor Trend has been doing the best job about testing electric vehicles since they came out. They started out testing the Ford F-150 Lightning, and they loaded it up, and it didn't go anywhere before it needed a recharge, under 100 miles. I think it was 74 or something when it was loaded. Now they've got a race report on sprinting from coast to coast in 9 long-range EVs to test the range anxiety versus the range distance. And I believe the Lucid won. I don't have the list of finishing list to tell you what happened, but the story says that the winning EV came in only 2 hours behind the fossil-fueled control car that was used, and I have not read the article comfortably enough to know what that might have been. It doesn't matter. It was fossil fuel, so all they had to do was fill up in gas stations. Interesting that the winning EV came in only 2 hours behind. The losing EV, the last one, came in 19 hours behind the fossil fuel vehicle. As they say in the headline, range anxiety was not the problem. Winning was. So that's something, Jay, that you can read if you haven't already read it, and I will read it more. But it was interesting that they did this test and what the results came out to be against a fossil fuel control car, goes to show that if you know what you're doing, you don't need to have range anxiety, which I have been the most vocal about. Jay has been much less vocal about.
And, I'm glad you're starting to see the light, even though I have to say I thought about range and range anxiety because I've been looking at European car magazines, and I'll get to that in a second. But as I was driving down to New York this morning in my diesel Touareg, and my gas gauge was at a little less than half, and all of a sudden I thought, oh my gosh, I need fuel here, and then I looked at my range, and I still had 335 miles of range.
That's correct.
So,
good old diesel.
And I think now, after I refueled anyway because I found some cheap diesel, and I had like 690-mile range with a full tank. So range anxiety is a relative thing. But also, I wanted to mention about European car magazines. I read a few, and they're testing electric vehicles very much the same. Their technical spec sheets are very much the same as they have for ICE cars. And they test efficiency as well as range. So the miles per gallon number is really important. And we in all of this range anxiety, we tend to forget about, efficiency, fuel efficiency. Whether it's a diesel, gas, or electric vehicle, And also, I was seeing, going through this, what used to be one of my favorite magazines when I lived over there, the number of electric vehicles they're testing all in all through the magazine is obviously increasing. There are more and more, the number of vehicles is, I think, it seems to be greater in Europe than it is here, number of cars on the market. Also, there are a lot more more affordable EVs, smaller cars. And yes, those cars also have less range. A lot of those cars only have like a 200-mile range. But, you know, as put-around town cars, they do the job just fine.
Well, as I have agreed with you on that front, as long as you're really only driving 200 miles or less a day and don't do lots of long-distance driving like you do, and sometimes I do, there's no range anxiety to be concerned about. I do not know what the recent weather that we had for this show was, hovering around 1 degree on the morning that the show was taped. It'll be back up in the 20s soon after. And I could think of was, I wonder what happens when they start up a fully charged electric vehicle, no matter what it is, and they go 10 miles, how much the battery range drops in this kind of weather.
Well, let me tell you something.
But it's still not enough to become range anxiety for 200-mile-a-day users or less.
I was supposed to go down to New York in an Ioniq 5 this morning, and because of the cold weather, it was suggested that, well, maybe we don't.
Oh, so you had range anxiety.
Good. I did not.
Well, you didn't use it because you didn't have to. But you were definitely concerned.
Well, somebody expressed a concern for me, so I can deny that. But we're done with the Ioniq. I'll drive it some other time.
Okay.
Not in 1 degree weather.
So what else do you have on? What else in Europe did you see? Do you see any nice cars that you like that are your European design for Europe and not for the U.S. and
no, all the nice cars they have there we have here. Pretty much, nothing much different there. It's more of the everyday drive drivers that are different. You know, they drive, generally speaking, smaller cars. And
any Mustangs on the roads?
You mean the real Mustang?
Ones that they are actually exporting from here to go over there.
I didn't see any, but you have to figure that Europe has changed a lot in the almost 30 years that I've lived there, and the way, I know I'm repeating myself in some way or another, but the road systems are such a, first of all, there's no longer any place you can speed except on the German autobahns, and nobody knows how long that will last. Everywhere else, there's a lot of traffic on the roads, and speeds are limited and speeds are enforced pretty much everywhere. So there's not much fun to be had on the roads as opposed
to... In Europe
to,
all over, right? Because of the speed cameras and everything else that's going on?
Yeah. But that and traffic and just overall congestion. I mean, you know, cars are just a means of transportation, and that's really what they are. Let's face it. We're lucky enough that we live in an area where we can have fun driving our either sports cars or fun cars, but we are pretty lucky with that, and we should enjoy it while it lasts.
Has there been any discussion in the U.S. that you know of, or did we already discuss this in a previous show, about the possibility of controlling our speed by measuring time between electronic toll collection roads?
Well, obviously the technology is there, and the day that law enforcement has the okay from a legal standpoint to strike a deal with Easy Pass, we're done with speeding. It'll be that simple, right? On mass spikes on I-87. I was thinking about that going through on I-87 coming back from Newark yesterday. And I came back, you know, up 87, and our long stretches where, you know, the Easy Pass cameras could serve as speed control. But as I mentioned last week, if once people have accepted the fact that you are going to be your speed is going to be controlled, you just follow the speed limit. I believe I mentioned that last week. On the Paris Périphérique, everybody's going 30 miles an hour, not a mile an hour faster, and that's because speed is enforced very strictly, and people have just gotten used to just moseying along at 30 miles an hour, and it makes things pretty comfortable, I have to say.
Well, as we know, if you're going 5 miles an hour faster than somebody else, you're only going those 5 miles. You're only getting there minutes sooner. You're not really getting there at a greatly accelerated rate on roads around here. Even I watch people drive 684, and except for those cowboys that are going 90 to 100 miles an hour, weaving through the traffic, which Connecticut is attempting to have legislation to try to allow the police to go out after those guys on the Connecticut roads. When I'm traveling, as you have often done yourself, traveling in the right lane, sometimes at the posted speed limit or even faster, because people in the passing lanes to the left are going slower, you don't really get to your destination significantly faster time-wise by going maybe 5 miles an hour faster than your competition to the left of you. And as you say, you get used to driving in Europe at 30 miles an hour all the time, and you get there because everybody gets there and you don't have slowdowns periodically like you see on our roads.
Correct. So, little practical tidbits here. 1 degree weather, I had my windshield was dirty this morning. Sun was hitting in the windshield, and I couldn't see anything. So I mistakenly put my wipers on and was hoping for some washer fluid, and none came out. And it was, I guess, frozen. But I stopped and put washer fluid, and the washer fluid would still not come out of the nozzle. So
okay, I can discuss that a little bit knowledgeably, because I have found the washer fluid itself is supposedly rated between 20 and 30 degrees below zero. The problem is it doesn't seem to sometimes work in the tubing that goes from the container to the windshield. And I think that's what you experience in your situation. I don't know why washer fluid wouldn't stay freeze-proof all the way up to the windshield wipers, but that seems to be what happens sometimes. And I have noted that, and I don't think windshield has anything to do with it, because windshield is not supposed to have anything to do with it. But it is very annoying when you know you've got washer fluid in your container and you try to do what you did, especially since the first time the wipers try to wipe that stuff off, it smears the windshield sometimes before it actually clears it.
Then I did something else stupid, because I kept enough fluid that I bought to add to splash onto my windshield, and figured that the windshield wiper blade was a little dirty, so I decided to run my fingers to clean it, and then because the windshield wiper was frozen, it just ripped. So now I have
it ripped?
So
you have to replace it.
Correct.
Yeah.
So
you probably had to replace it anyways. One thing that we haven't discussed is make sure we make sure that you have windshield washer fluid, but wiper blades, when they wear down, don't often tell you that they're worn down until you try to use them after you haven't had to use them for weeks. And as we experience this fall, months maybe, unless you needed to use windshield washers to clear the windshield from grime, not necessarily snow-related.
But we know that rubber
something that do need to be periodically replaced. And usually it's after you found out it's too late, that you wish you'd done it before you find out that they don't work very well.
That's right. Everything stops working when you most need it. Yesterday, the heating goes off in your house. Why not?
Why not, right?
And speaking of such things, we're coming to that final moment where you're going to give some sage advice.
We might go into safety tips, since we've had a couple of light snow conditions out there. and we've had a couple of ice, black ice experiences in terms of drivers finding that they don't stick to the road when they're going around a corner. They slide sideways sometimes. You then have to go by an auto body shop to find out how many vehicles had trouble during this weather. We've had extensive discussions on this on recent shows to this one about driving safely, and all we can do is emphasize that you need to remember to drive safely when the road conditions aren't perfect.
Just relax behind the wheel, too.
Just relax behind the wheel and take your time.
Does not mean not focus. I mean just don't stress.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.